Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, happy Monday. I am here to continue on with our story. Let's see, he's still left off, Wiccan's still in the pit, and he's trying to get out. And we'll just kind of go from there. All right, chapter 31 of Displaced. Wiccan. The big day came a whole lot faster than I expected. Going back to work was something I was itching to do. My spirits were high that morning upon waking. Funny, huh? I used to dread going to work all the time, never having a break, never getting a chance to do anything fun. Turns out I was more of a workaholic than I originally thought. When all the guys woke up, I got up with them. I pulled my clothes out of my small drawer assigned for all of my things and made sure to stay out of everyone's way. There was a certain flow to the morning routine. One disturbance pissed off the rest of the group. Once dressed, I followed Justice. He would take me to the roof where the restaurant was located. There I would be trained in how to properly bus tables, do the dishes, and help prep the kitchen. Most of it was stuff I already knew from previous job opportunities. I hated working in food, but even that beat being down, working down in the deep. While most of the guys turned right to go into the room where I had done my orientation, we went to the left toward the cafeteria with the other guys who had jobs elsewhere. Rather than stop to eat, Justice and I kept going. We crossed the room, made our way past the recreation room, and to a large red door bolted up tight. I'd seen this door a number of times during my endless wandering while I worked on healing over. Whatever was behind it had to be important. I was about to find out what exactly was there. Justice entered in a passcode into a keypad on the wall next to the door. One loud clank after another, the locks undid themselves, and the bolts shifted out of the way. I'd seen similar technology in a movie once. Watching it in action firsthand was mesmerizing. Each thud of metal hitting metal caused me to jump. Then again, I wasn't expecting so many locks. Maybe two or three were visible. The sound repeated at least 10 times before I stopped counting, and then it resonated and echoed in my ears long after it was done. The door swung open, and I was staring at the stairway to heaven itself. In front of me was this narrow hallway leading to a massive stairwell that went up at least 100 feet. Between me and the stairs was a security office next to an electronic archway that had to be some kind of advanced body scanner. I swallowed. Maklevan could be seen in the window of the office. Jupiter. He nodded at Justice, not giving him the time of day to really acknowledge his presence. When the alien's gaze locked on me, however, he stood and opened the door just as I was about to pass under the arch. You're looking strong given the punishment you've received from me. I did not think you would be on your feet so soon, Jupiter said. Was I supposed to respond? I'd been told to only say yes, sir, or no, sir. Jupiter's large orange eyes narrowed, and he leaned down so that he could be more at my level. Perhaps I did not punish you enough, boy. He was in a lot of pain. I assure you, he suffered greatly, Justice said softly. Patriarch has given him the minimum rest period and will make him work despite his wounds not being completely healed over. He thought it would be a more effective punishment for his rebellion. I kept my gaze glued to the floor in front of me. That was smart, right? Not engaging the alien was a better idea than trying to play the wounded puppy or the defiant jerk. Jupiter circled me a few times like some kind of bird of prey. Any second, I expected him to swoop down and wrap his talons around me, the poor, defenseless, adorable bunny rabbit. The guy had an agenda against me still. He leaned in toward me. You can go up this time, but I will be having a word with my superiors about this. Chapter 32, Wiccan. Climbing all those stairs took an hour. When we got to the top, I wanted to pass out, or at the very least curl into a ball for a while and do nothing but catch my breath. We took a few breaks on the way. Justice, of course, didn't seem winded in the slightest. He made the journey every day, and soon I would, too. There was a plain metal door in front of us. Justice opened it with ease. No locks, no hard budging, nothing. We walked through it. Sunshine, fresh air. The roof gave me both of those for the first time since I'd arrived on the ship. The sun wasn't directly over my head, but I could see it shining over a massive space of green grass and forest. There was an artificial blue sky as well off in the distance. The garden is over there, Justice pointed out toward the blue sky. There, the aquabonds create an ecosystem similar to what we had on Earth, as well as manage the passage of time. Everything you could ever want is there, like the Garden of Eden. Cool. It's real, true space. In about a minute, Earth will be in our view for 10 minutes. They try to keep us from seeing home, but some people also love it, he pointed above us. Home. Sure enough, as I gazed up at the glass windows above us, the massive blue and brown planet I used to walk on came into view. Clouds swirled over its surface. I'd seen a number of videos and pictures. None of them did Earth justice. It's by far the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. Wow, I whispered. Justice stared at me. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. What? I asked when I noticed his gaze was still hovering on me. Do I got something on my face? Usually this moment is more emotional. I shrugged. The meltdown thing again? It's not going to happen, man. Sorry to disappoint you. I guess I'm hard to phase. I guess so. He eyed me for a moment longer before waving for me to follow him down a cobblestone street. Well, let's go get you trained and your work bracelets. You'll need that so you can stay up here. It's kind of like a way of identifying you as one of the undesirables. There's a skepticism in his tone. I couldn't blame him for not believing me about the meltdown thing. When I thought about home, all I felt was numb, though. It'd been so long since I had any pleasant family moments, so there wasn't a whole lot new to miss. Longing for a sober mother for years now. Can't say I remember much about my dad. He died when I was 3. The only thing I was leaving behind was a bunch of jobs I hated, drama, and bills. Not like I enjoyed being on the ship, necessarily, but with the hope of getting out of the pit, I also saw opportunity to make the most of my adventure. It kept me sane. Earth was a faraway place. I once roamed and nothing more. Numb, all over. Only Chevelle had me feeling. Again, feeling real emotions. She pissed me off and made me gushy all at the same time. With her, I saw more potential for a different kind of future for me. As I gazed out at the garden one last time, knowing she was down there somewhere, I was the closest to her as I'd ever been. Timber. Timber Hudson couldn't stop pacing. While Chevelle disappeared back into the office, he was more or less trapped in the living room. He couldn't go back to the bedroom. There were children sleeping in the bed. The television didn't appeal to him. It wouldn't calm his thoughts in the slightest, not after the news he'd just gotten from Chevelle. His mother had always taught him to release his emotions. Letting any kind of feelings sit inside of him for too long would hinder his ability to think clearly, and Timber needed to think. So many things were going on inside of his heart. There was no way for him to pin down one feeling and let it flow. In the living room, in the small drawer in the end table, right next to his favorite chair, was a small moleskin journal. He always kept one on his person when he was on Earth. It fit perfectly in his pants pocket. Inside was a treasure trove of memories and observations. Most of them were brief. Ever since coming aboard the Aquabon ship, he'd had a whole lot more to share. Settling into his chair, he pulled out the small journal, its pages full of his tale. In fact, he'd filled 3 journals worth so far. Procuring multiple books hadn't been as hard as he originally thought it would be. Rereading his words on paper would help his mind become solid once again. Chapter 33, Timber. Lucky. That's what my best friend Nate always called me. I always got lucky. I got lucky with my big break on my first try. I got lucky in that I get to do what I love every day. I got lucky that I came from a supportive family that helped me keep a level head. I got lucky in finding a great girlfriend who's not like the rest of the typical entertainment scene, understands it, and has passions of her own. That luck continued. Getting to be with Chevelle was a stroke of luck. She's so much saner than I would be, than I should be. But something about her sanity kept me from flipping out as well. There's lots of process. Chevelle writes a lot about that, processing and how it takes time. Most of my life, I've had it fairly good. In fact, it wasn't until I arrived on the Aquavon ship that I even remotely saw what it was like to be a lower-class citizen. Not to say that I've always grown up with wealth, but I've always been comfortable. If my parents struggled with money, they never let on. Then I made my own money and my own name. I'm 21 and set for life. On the Aquabon ship, I was second class and low on the totem pole because I was male. Call me old-fashioned, but that wasn't something easy for me to accept. Naturally, to cope, I decided to overcompensate to hide my insecurity. I'm used to being the provider. The thing is, in my new living arrangement, there wasn't a whole lot I could provide. Still, I was determined to try. I cleaned up my mess after Laura went to the park. We were on the day 3 of being on the Aquabon ship. Time passes strangely on the ship. I'm not convinced that a full day is truly a day. My internal clock liked to argue a lot with the intervals that the sun rose and set with. Sleep was never something that came easily to me, though. Somehow I managed on the ship. Listening to the girls' breathing, soft snoring, and quiet murmuring lured me into a comfortable rest. I attributed it to the fact that I was not alone. I never slept well when I was alone. Keep in mind that I didn't say, I never slept when I was alone. Keep in mind that I didn't say sleep well. I mean, I never sleep. For some reason, I just stay awake, which sucks when I'm on my own because of work. Talia used to video chat with me through the night, watch me sleep while I called the giant stuffed red dog. She put up with so many of my quirks. That's probably why we were able to stay together. She said she loved me despite them, not because of them, but despite them. And they were all things I didn't want to show Chevelle. Once everything was finished in the kitchen, I rejoined her in the living room. Are you ready to go explore? Because I'm ready to show you around. Some fresh air will do us both some good. She gave me that look again. You know, the one you get from people that makes you wonder if you grew an extra head. Her head cocked to the side slightly. Her brows did a mixture of furrowing and raising, and her lips pursed ever so slightly. I hated that look. What? I asked. You're just so what? I pressed. If she said perfect, I think I would scream on the inside. Perfection was a word I loathed to hear. Chevelle shook her head. I'm not sure how to describe it. Strange? I guess that's the word. You're kind of surreal in more ways than one. I'm not sure I understand what you mean by that, but okay. I shrugged, trying to let it just roll off my back. Maybe she was more perceptive than I gave her credit for. I was a pretty crappy actor after all. If I can think of a way to explain it, I will. Let's go get that fresh air then, since you seem to think it will help. She put on her shoes. I put on mine, wishing I had my sandals. For the event at the mall, it had been recommended I wear a pair of sneakers or boots. Being on my feet all day was going to kill my arches, and the weather wasn't going to be sandals and shorts appropriate. Sandals were my favorite footwear, though. Small comforts. Without saying another word, I walked out to the balcony, trying to remember the button for the floor with the playground in this school. The movement of our personal elevator would take a lot for me to get used to. Something about moving so fast and also going in every direction manageable was disorienting. I'd gotten the button right, however, and soon we were slowly near the open space of the most amazing playground I'd ever seen. It was my second time gazing at the thing, and I was still impressed. The slides were tall and spiraled down from massive towers. There were supervised climbing walls, ladders, tunnels, hidden passages, swings, just about everything that could go on a playground was there. The building was for the school behind it. Oh, the building for the school was behind it. I found Laura right away, swinging on the swing with a group of other little girls around her age. She waved at me when she noticed. I was looking at her, and I waved back. There was no doubt in my mind that she would be okay on her own, but I could tell she was happy we had come out to watch her all the same. I didn't want her to think we were going to ditch her at random, just like her mom did. Paul said he'd be here, I said quietly. He's helping a lot of people adjust. That's his job or something. He's telling me how everyone is supposed to have one, unless you're a woman, of course. Then it's optional. I rolled my eyes and hoped that didn't come back to bite me later. Ugh, Chevelle groaned. Oh, I think I see Paul, she pointed, and I followed the track of her finger. Across the yard was Paul, helping a little boy with his shoelaces. He glanced our way and nodded. As soon as he was done helping the boy, he jogged over. Hello, I'm glad you came out to see more of our space, Paul said, bowing slightly to Chevelle. She gave a weak smile. I came out so I could talk to you. Sure, what can I help you with? She glanced up at me and then down at the ground. Last night we were watching television. We saw something on there that was kind of disturbing. Oh? Yeah, I think it was the aliens and they were beaming some humans. She folded her arms in front of her. Paul let out a heavy sigh. I'm sorry you saw that. Those were the undesirables, and they probably deserved it. They're not good. Trust me. Chevelle waved a hand in front of her. I'm not finished yet. The one getting beat on happens to be a friend of mine. I want to help him. Are you saying you don't want? Paul tilted his. You have a companion, Paul stated. If you were to take an undesirable for a companion, an undesirable who hasn't earned the right to be a companion, it would be asking for a big favor. That means you couldn't ask for a second one. Second one that you would need to ensure that Timber wasn't sent somewhere else. And I have to stop in the middle of the chapter again. So we're going to pause there. And you all have a wonderful day.